The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
The NBA fining Patrick Beverley $30,000 for what they called egregious profanity during his victory lap after beating the Clippers. You know he thinks it was worth it. The NHL fining Ryan Hartman $4,250 for flipping off Evander Kane. Hartman said it was worth it. And fans paid the fine on Venmo to cover it. So you know they think it was worth it too. All that money is going to Children's Hospital, Minnesota, so something very good came from that.
How come the Bulls didn't celebrate sixth place instead of seventh?
Atlanta Hawks rolling. Charlotte Hornets frustration boiling over in this game with Miles Bridges tossing his mouthpiece after he was ejected. It hit a 16-year-old fan. He has since apologized and is making good out of that. And then the Pelicans rolling the Spurs, start of something special, C.J. McCollum said about that win for New Orleans. It's the play-in to get to the play-in, to try to move on and play in the playoffs. Frank Isola, around the horn to you. Who impressed you most? And do either have a shot at their next game?
Well, and give C.J. McCollum a lot of credit. He's been a big lift for that Pelicans team. But for me, it's the Atlanta Hawks. If you go back to what they did last year, beating Philadelphia, and who knows, if Trae Young didn't get hurt, maybe they would have beaten Milwaukee. They know how to win big games on the road. Do I think they'll win on Friday night? I do. Do I think they can maybe take two games off of Miami? I believe they can. But none of the teams that I've seen that played last night are going very far.
But you did say Atlanta over Cleveland now in the play-in game. Israel Gutierrez, I turn to you.
Yeah, I have a little bit more faith in the Pelicans now than I did before. I think C.J. McCollum, obviously, a bit of a wild card there, can give you 35 on any given game, so he could probably win you a playoff game or two. And they're playing in L.A., which, you know, against the Clippers, you want to say, that's obviously a road game, but against the Clippers, you know, they're in a win-now situation. They're in a do-or-die situation, and that's not, an organization that does well there. So I feel like the Pelicans have something of a chance. I think with the Hawks, what you're looking at is the team, is this going to be the team that can sort of flip it on and on, on and off in the playoffs? Like last year, they obviously did getting to the conference finals. This year, the way they ended the season, not entirely healthy. Obviously, John Collins didn't play yesterday, but can they be the team? Because if you look at Atlanta versus Miami and you say, hey, Trae Young, probably the best player on the floor, at least offensively. So if games are close, that's the guy you can trust. So I think they've got a shot. But I think
so now you're interested in the Atlanta Hawks. This is interesting to me because a certain panelist named Israel Gutierrez 2 days ago during a FaceTime where no one even volunteered you to predict. You said the Charlotte Hornets were going to run the play into the play-in, then run the play-in and make some noise in the playoffs. So they turned it off and off, some might say, by losing by 29. This is a terrible fall here for Gutierrez.
Harry Lyles Jr., I'll bring you in here.
Yeah, I gave you some home cooking on Tuesday. I'm going to give you some more today. For me, it's the Atlanta Hawks. They showed that they are able to win when they are not at their best. And when they're not at their best is when Trae Young scores 25 points or less, which he did that last night. And they're usually 8-16, but they were able to pull out that win because of two big players in Clint Capella and DeAndre Hunter. Clint Capella was key to their success last postseason because when they did have bad shooting nights, he was able to step up and gave them that other dimension. Right. And to me, that is going to be more handy when you go up against the Cavaliers team, especially if they're going to have Jared Allen back. So to me, if the Hawks are going to make another run like they did last season, which that's asking a lot, you're going to have to be able to do those kinds of things.
Mina Kimes.
I agree with Harry. I mean, I was really impressed by the Hawks, not just because they dominated from start to finish, but the way in which they dominated. They looked incredibly complete to me. And Harry, you're spot on about Trae Young. You know, seeing him get trapped and face guarded, his ability to facilitate and then the ability of his teammates to step up. I mean, DeAndre Hunter, I thought, was so impressive in the paint. And that's going to be key going forward if they, when they play the Cavaliers, because even if Jared Allen is back, he's not going to be 100%. And what we've seen is they're vulnerable there without him. And I have confidence in the rest of the Hawks now.
Frank Isola back in.
You know, the one thing about all these teams winning, they play on Friday. Then you have the quick turnaround against the number one seed. No shot. for the Pelicans or the Clippers to beat Phoenix. They're at a different level. And even Miami, they're going to be well rested. This isn't Atlanta, no offense, going up against the New York Knicks, a team that was vulnerable. This is going to be, if Atlanta were to win,
no
or
offense,
Cleveland,
he says.
That's going to be very difficult against
Has
against
any
Southern
human
Miami.
On our panel ever met no offense when they said no offense? Less than Frank Isola just did right there. We're going to... Let's talk about the Pelicans for a second. Can we do that? They did win the game last night. Not a lot of attention in that discussion. But let's talk about this team and the video of Zion 360 dunking, which came out, hello, minutes before opening tip. I mean, that's interesting placement. He's looking good. But again, he's not playing this postseason, Harry. How should Pelicans feel and Pelicans fans feel about that?
So, like, I understand the fans' frustration, right? If you're watching a guy that's able to do something that a fraction of a percent of anybody on the planet can do, you're, of course, going to be like, hey, why isn't he out there? But the reason he's not out there is because there's a difference between doing that and then playing 34 minutes of an NBA game when you're weighing, you know, 285 pounds. So, to me, I think this would probably play a little bit better with the fans of that organization if the organization was coming out and saying, hey, he's on the right track. He might not be back this season, but Zion is your long-term piece. So, you might not get him this postseason, but if you get him for 10 or 15 years, then who cares?
Could they get him for 10 or 15 minutes, though, during this postseason? Mita Kimes, the question to you, maybe start here, the timing of this video release.
I mean, I can't remember a postseason in which we spent more time analyzing injured stars, like videos of them, looking at injury timelines and trying to predict when they'll be back. I think it's telling that it seems more likely at this point that Ben Simmons, who has also not played basketball in forever, is rumored to be coming back versus Boston, more so than anything we've heard about Zion. In fact, David Griffin told Cassidy Hubbard, you know, a successful ramp up for him would be training camp. And if I'm a Pelicans fan, I'm happy nonetheless, because there was a point where he was MIA somewhere in Portland. Now he's with the team.
Okay.
He's playing.
Okay.
He looks like himself. And I think, to Harry's point, they should be focused on the long term.
Frank, you think the team wants this video out there to show fans, you see, he is progressing? You think they would have said, well, maybe not right before we play our biggest game of the season?
I think it's a financial thing on both ends. I think Zion's in line for rookie extension. I also think the Pelicans are thinking, you know what, we're probably going to lose anyway if we do advance and we have to play the Phoenix Suns, so what's the point? But here's the problem. You know, the NBA lost more games this year to player injuries than any other year before, and I blame it on all these performance coaches and the assistant performance coach, because why, if we have all these guys, why is everybody missing games? And Mina mentioned the expression before, which gets used all the time now. Ramping up. Ben Simmons is ramping up. Robert Williams is ramping up. Zion Williamson is ramping up. How about playing? It used to be you're either playing or you're not playing. Enough with ramping up. We went from load management to ramping up. It's the only sport where they do this. No other sport the guys ramp up. They just play. It's incredible.
No need for a ramp up there. Frank just came out with fire. So back to this particular topic, though, Frank Isola. The idea that,
all right,
oh, he could 360. He could... He'd be better served to give them 10 minutes during a playoff run now.
Thank you. How about ramping up by playing 10 and 15 minutes a game? Do you know that he has played 82 games now in three seasons? Greg Oden, that's a scary name, played 82. Zion's only played 85. We're entering that territory.
Wait, but he did play. Well, let's not get lost here. When he did play, he was averaging 27 and 10. Israel Gutierrez, I'll bring you in here on this video coming out.
Okay, here's where I've landed on this. It's a feel-good moment, regardless. And you said before the game, right? Well, if they'd lost the game, then you say, oh, at least we have Zion looking good and ramping up toward the toward training camp, and next season we can see what that actually looks like. If they win and then potentially go on to win the next game and make the playoffs, at least there's conversation about him potentially coming back, and the team could tell you, no, no, we want to play it safe. This is better than what we thought we would do without him. Let's make sure that next year is right. And so I think that's basically what we're looking at here. If the team is telling you, hey, it's going to be until training camp, it's not going to be a while, at least there are signs of progress. And when you've got CJ McCollum on the court doing what he's doing with these guys, then I think it's sort of you combine them and say, hey, next year is going to be a really fun year for us. Trust us.
I know you want to mock the games he's played, Frank Isola, but 27-7 last year on 61% field goal percentage in the NBA proves that he's worth waiting for, don't you
think? They said that he was going to be available on opening night. That was in October. It's now April, and he's still not playing. So you tell me.
One more story
here. Back to the ramp up.
Greg Popovich shooting down retirement questions after the loss last night. Take a listen.
You think he'll come back and do this again?
Devin?
You? Well, that's questions inappropriate.
Inappropriate, Israel? Is that Pop just being Pop, or do you think he's thinking about retiring or thinking about coming back? You know Pop better than anybody here is.
Well, and I don't feel like I know him that well. And so what I do think is that this is him basically calling it inappropriate because the timing of it is inappropriate. It's about the players. It's about their season being over. And let's be honest, like Greg Popovich has talked about not loving the direction the NBA is going. He doesn't have a superstar on his team that's going to be able to carry him to contention. So really this just comes down to, does he love coaching enough that he just wants to stay with this organization as long as possible? Maybe have another couple of moments, maybe a playoff run or two, but really, it just comes down to his love for the game and for coaching. If you were to ask me, a betting person, he's going to retire. And he's the type of coach who does not want the swan song, does not want every single game to be about him. So if he retires, it's going to be after not talking about it and just doing it in the offseason.
Frank Isola, how did you hear Pop last night?
Hey, listen, asking for his password for his email account, that would be inappropriate. Asking him last night after the game if this is it for him is hardly inappropriate. Of course, the question is inbounds. And I think this, I think that he probably feels that some people, maybe within his own organization, are trying to push him out, and he doesn't want to leave yet. And he doesn't want this to now become a conversation, and that's why he's trying to put an end to it right there.
Mina Kimes, your read of it?
Well, I'm not a popologist like Izzy, a pop culture expert, maybe you could call it, but I do know one thing.
Yeah,
this guy
good.
Hates talking well about played. A lot of things, of course, but the number one thing he hates talking about is himself. It was inevitable that he would give a non-answer to this question because he doesn't, regardless of whether he stays or leaves, he doesn't want that to be the news after his team is bounced. I'll push back a little bit on Izzy, though. I've seen interviews with him where he seems energized by coaching this young team. And to me, yes, he might retire, but I also think he's loved this season. I wouldn't be surprised if he comes back.
Harry Lyles Jr.
Yeah, I try to look at it from his perspective, and I guess just because in that moment he might have felt like it was inappropriate, but I also get it from the reporter's perspective of like, hey, would you rather me ask this right now, or would you rather me ask this maybe during exit interviews? Because I don't think Pop would probably like that question then. To me, like, I don't really have an issue with it. Do I think that he's going to retire? I don't think he is yet, because I do think that he's still enjoying this, though I don't think it's unfair to ask that question just because of the amount of success that he's had and how different his job looks now compared to it has the past two decades.
Gutierrez's last word after the horn.
Did you guys see how nice he was to Cassidy Hubbard yesterday? He's clearly lost his edge. He's on the tail end. He's going to retire.
Frank Isola went full on goblin mode in that segment. He's got the lead, 15, Kimes 11, Lyles Jr. 9, Gutierrez minus 8. Fire cell next.
I'm about to ramp up in the next
one.
Yeah, everyone's ramping up.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to Around the Horn, coming to you from the Heineken River Deck at Pier 17.
Hitting heroics to Vladimir Guerrero Jr. last night. 4 for 4, 3 home runs, all of them lasers, 14 total bases. His hand was spiked and stomped on between home run 1 and 2. He got it wrapped. After the game, he needed 2 stitches, but he still hit more home runs after, single-handedly beat the Yankees. Gerrit Cole, even, of all people, tipped his cap at Vladimir Guerrero. Mina, what's the best part of Vlad Jr.'s night?
I just love that Gerrit Cole tipped his cap like that. And then when he was asked about it after the game, he said, if you had a cap, you tip it to, which I just, for all of the machismo around the unwritten rules, there's something really cool about seeing one elite player who, as you noted, is not exactly the friendliest guy, just give unadulterated praise to another player witnessing greatness, which is what we saw.
My first crisis of conscience here. People have spoken, they've asked for fewer banned words. There was a banned word in that statement.
An adultery?
I have to allow it. I have to allow it. The people have spoken. Harry Lyles Jr., what you take away from Vlad Guerrero Jr. last night?
I agree with Mina. It was the tip of the hat, but it's because do you realize how thoroughly you got to whoop somebody's behind to think to tip your cap in the year 2022? Like, that's not something people do anymore. This man hit a quarter mile's worth of home runs. Like, that is just an incredible showing. I love that this younger generation has guys that are like superheroes like Vladdy, the way that I looked up to Ken Griffey Jr. It was just an incredible performance.
Israel Gutierrez?
The optics of the banned words, not looking good.
All right, you know what? That's it. I don't care what the people said. Everybody, this is a ridiculous thing. We're the show with the mute button of banned words. Of course we're banning people. Go ahead, Israel.
I think my favorite part is he just jumped to the top of the MVP betting odds, and he's probably going to stay there. But the finger, I think, is largely getting overlooked. Like, you saw how gross that thing looked. I would imagine that they tried to numb it, or do you think he played through that pain gripping that bat? I think that, by far, is the number one, because not only did it probably hurt a ton, but it was probably his motivation to hit those home runs because he was so mad about it.
Right, guys, don't laugh.
I love that his dad did not use batting gloves when he hit. Vlad uses them, but just like his dad, he hits to all parts of the field. How about 14 total bases, most by a Blue Jay since Carlos Delgado had 16 19 years ago. That's something else. And to do it at Yankee Stadium. By the way, youngest player to hit three home runs at Yankee Stadium since 1945. It's a long time ago.
You said his dad didn't wear batting gloves. Something else his dad didn't do, hit three home runs in a game in his entire Hall of Fame career, and he's done it now twice in his early 20s. We'll move on. The baseball culture war yesterday, that analytics screwed Clayton Kershaw out of history. Can we talk about that? People want to say this is why baseball is declining, that he was lifted after 80 pitches and 7 innings of perfect baseball, never given the chance at the ultimate career capper, what would have been the 24th perfect game all time. But hearing Kershaw say it was the right call to lift him after the game, here's the full quote, that he hadn't even pitched 6 innings so far this spring, never mind 7, and to blame it on the lockout, Harry Lyles, first your gut reaction over pulling him, and then whether Kershaw, what he said, illuminated it for you.
Yeah, my first reaction was, what are they doing? Because we weren't talking about a no-hitter. We're talking about a perfect game. Like, there's only been a handful of those two ever happen in the history of baseball. And we've been playing baseball for 250 years now almost. So to me, that was my initial reaction. But after seeing the comments and then being reminded of his injury history, I don't know if y'all have ever had shoulder issues. They are not fun. If I was him and I'm like, hey, like, this is good enough for me, I understand why he didn't do it.
250 years for baseball history? That wasn't 150. Israel Gutierrez.
Hey, I'm not good at math.
Clayton took the emotion out of it, basically, and said, yes, they did the right thing for me, for the organization, for winning long-term, etc. But it's Clayton Kershaw. Like, this is a unique situation. It's one of the greatest pitchers of all time. It's a situation where this team has gotten over his injuries in the past. They've won a World Series.
Okay.
At least something. Like, if you were to really ask him, honestly, I bet you he wanted to be that, whatever, 24th perfect game, because you just pile on to the career, you know, attributes for a guy who's taken a beating in the postseason. So I don't care how early it is in the season. Truth serum, he wanted that perfect game.
Frank Isola?
I get it. First start, it's 36 degrees in Minneapolis. But here's the thing. You know, you have a chance to join an exclusive club, but guess what? Blame it on the performance coaches, because they try to baby all these pitchers, and everybody pitches less, and there are more injuries now.
Goodness.
So how would they know if he threw 20 more pitches, he would have gotten injured? I'm not buying it.
And Mina Kimes.
I'm sorry. Frank Isola is just at war with trainers today and ramping up and keeping close track of injury history. And I disagree, because Kershaw's injury history matters a lot here. Look, if he says it's the right call, it is the right call. He is 34 years old. He is in it for the long term. This is a World Series contending team. No reason to risk an injury now. And he's already a Hall of Famer. Come on.
Remember the Yoan Santana no-hitter Frank Isola, where the Mets go out
right.
30-plus? A lot of people think he wasn't the same, or his career was basically effectively ended after pushing so much there. Although I don't know if that's totally an A to B discussion.
I thought Beltran got a hit in that game. Down the third base line.
Yeah, it's Lyles Jr. taking a break. First row seat for Kimes Isola.
Ooh.
No Doubt next.
Ramp up, Mina. Ramp up.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Egregious profanity is what the NBA said as they were fining Patrick Beverley $30,000 for the way he cursed his way through the Timberwolves' victory over his former team, the Clippers. Middle finger fine in the NHL for Ryan Hartman. That's $4,250 for flipping off Evander Kane. Hartman said it was well worth it. Minnesota Wild fans started venoming Hartman money to cover the fine. As I said, that money is now going to Children's Hospital in Minnesota, which is great. What is the most egregious here? Mina Kimes, around the horn to you.
My answer is neither. I love both of these acts. Patrick Beverley leaning into that WWE villain role has made the playoffs more fun. And of course, going against Evander Kane like that, that's a populist move, and it was celebrated by fans.
Isola?
Well, Mina has a history of giving the middle finger, so we won't get into that. It's obviously Patrick Beverley for what he did, because the league has told the players on social media, got to watch your mouth, so they came after him. The other one's kind of spur of the moment.
Frank egregious Isola on our show. And yes, he got to the bottom of a story we just heard during the commercial break. Mina, in school suspension for what?
Flipping the double bird because a student didn't want to join National Honor Society.
This is why you didn't make it in
life. Defending the honor of the National Honor Society. I would have given you.
Somebody's got to do it.
I would have given you more points. Here we go. We'll move on. Charity flag football. Aaron Rodgers is playing in this game. And he was picked off by a JUCO player named Darius Maxwell. Maxwell gave Rodgers the ball back. It's a little taunt. Rodgers threw the ball back at Maxwell. If you're Maxwell, got a taunt. Right, Frank? And if you're Rodgers, did he defend himself well?
You know what? I think both guys handled it well, but this is like the NFC Championship game from a couple of years ago. He should have run.
Oh,
that's what he should have done in that situation. Should have run.
And Kimes.
Such a hater today. I'm going to be less hatery and point out that kid has great hands. Aaron Rodgers has no one to throw to. Connect the dots. Green Bay, put in a call. You need more wide receivers.
That's a hater.
This is a great show. What a
hater.
But Frank Isola's getting the 30 seconds of face.
Wow. All right, as we all know, Oakland is a great sports town, but the poor people of Oakland, they lost the Warriors to San Francisco, they lost the Raiders to Las Vegas, but they do have the A's who open up on Monday, and the Oakland Coliseum used to have a rat problem. Then they brought in all these feral cats, and guess what? They no longer have a rat problem. Do they play in the worst stadium in baseball? Yes, but at least when you go there, no more rats. Pizza rat's not there, hamburger rat, you got nothing to worry about. Go away.
That's an Always Sunny in Philadelphia plot.
Baby step.
By the way, one of my favorite movies, Ratatouille. We had a problem with...
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you the story later.